the Prescription Shop. They bring you Community Speaks. Community Speaks here on KBBS, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS. And joining me on Community Speaks this morning is Johnson County Commissioner Bill Novotny. Bill, how you doing this morning?
Hey, good. Brady, good morning.
It's a wonderful Monday.
It is. It's not snowing.
It's not.
The wind is kind of blowing, but not too bad. So, no, there's...
It's not 60 mile an hour.
No, but I did see snow in the forecast on Friday, but... So enjoy.
We don't want to talk about that. That's all the way at the end of the week.
All right.
We're hoping it changes before we get there. We are going to have a couple of days of about 60 this week.
It'll be good. So all those people who...
will feel a little bit like summertime. And maybe the snow in my yard will actually melt. I have snow for like 3 weeks later than everyone else because my front yard doesn't see any sunshine. I've got two big trees right behind my house. And so for maybe an hour a day, my front yard sees sunlight. And so it takes a long time to melt the snow.
Well, that just means you're not mowing the grass. So
you know what?
That.
That's true. I will enjoy that.
Look to the positive good.
Well, we're going to talk about a few things here this morning. One, you guys are going to be tackling the budget here pretty quick.
It is. The clerk always gets the process rolling. And so she's sent out the budget workshops and worksheets to all the elected officials as well as the department heads, and even we've got to set the budget for the commissioners. So that's kind of that first preliminary step. People will look at what they were funded at last year, actuals of what they've spent year to date, and then we'll compile their budgets and submit it by the middle of May to the county clerk, and then she sends it upstairs to the commissioners. We start the process of having budget hearings, and by July, we'll have a budget adopted, and that'll be also about the time that we know for sure exactly what's happening with the county valuation for mineral production. We'll have a pretty good idea of what sales tax is going to do for the year, and then also those other little pieces of revenue that we get. You know, just this morning they announced that Wyoming Lotto is going to transfer $1.4 million back to the cities and towns as part of the profit sharing that was set up when that was allowed to have Lotto in the state of Wyoming. So not a lot, but every penny helps. We don't get all of that $1.4 million, but we'll take whatever we can get. Plus then, of course, the money that we get from PILT and SRS, which is federal funds that come in because of our prohibition on using all the timber in the Bighorn National Forest and also all the public lands that are in our county, which is actually a good thing. We get that payment in lieu of taxes that we'd be able to assess on those. So every little bit helps. So it could be interesting.
That money you mentioned for the lotto, and I don't know if you know this or not, but is that decided on who gets what based on population, based on how many people buy lotto tickets in that area? Do you have any idea how that?
It's a formula, and it goes back to the point of sale of the ticket. So
okay.
We get a percentage of the profits of the lotto tickets that were sold in Johnson County.
So people like me that are banking on retirement for winning the lotto, we're helping out Johnson County here. We might see a little bit.
Absolutely. Play away. Play away.
Can't win if you don't play.
No, year, that's right? Right. That's right.
Well, we're talking a little bit about budget. And on a national note, it seems like, you know, they keep going back to the budget. You know, they'll do a little bit here, a little bit there, and we'll get it to just kind of continue. Tell us a little bit about what goes into it. When you sit down to hash out a budget, what goes into the decisions and things like that?
You know, first and foremost, the top priority is continuation of the essential services. Those are the services that we are required by law to provide. So it's everything from having a adequate chambers for a judge is the wording in the law. And you're like, wow, well, we have quite nice adequate chambers for the judges. Maybe even went a little overboard when they built. But regardless, you know, there's that component. Care for the indigent and mentally ill. We have to operate a library. Obviously, we have a hospital. We're responsible for public health, public safety. So everything from making sure that we can fund the sheriff's department, the road and bridge department, all of those core things that you have to do as local government. So when you get those tackled, those things that we absolutely have to do, then you start looking at, is there any available funds for some of those extra things? You know, some of the different things that we support are some of the programs that are run through the senior center, that whether it's Meals on Wheels or home health care that is involved with that, trails, you know, obviously been in the headlines a lot lately. JoCo First, all of these different entities that are either what are called ancillary arms of the county, which is the museum, the fairgrounds, the library, or secondary things that are not necessarily entities that are associated. Perfect example. We have a contract with Northern Wyoming Mental Health to provide mental health services to those that are underserved, people that are in crisis that are involved with what's called the Title 25, where that's an involuntary commitment, as well as making sure that there's a counselor that goes down once a week in KC and can meet with the people that need access to mental health services that wouldn't have it otherwise. The Family Crisis Center, something that we've continually supported. So anytime that a family is in crisis or an individual, that there are resources available, whether it's to get them out of an abusive situation, out of an emergency situation. So those are all those things that are also very, very important that we also have to try to find dollars for. And as the valuation goes down and the price of things, especially for the county, the cost of our health care, and now the legislature is going to require us to put even more funding into the retirement program of our retirees that are participating in that, and they're not retired yet, but they will be retired at some point, and to keep that fund solvent, because you have people that are phasing out of the workforce and are using the Wyoming retirement system. So we've got to keep that solvent so that it's there for the people that are working now, that one day when they retire, so they're not using Brady's scam-o-matic to fund the retirement of, here's my scheme, I'm going to buy scratch tickets. But we don't have scratch tickets, so you're going to have to think of something else, my friend. But just all those really important, essential services that we have to do. You know, we continue to see dramatic increases in our health insurance costs. Last year was 7%. You know, at some point, that gets to where it's not sustainable. And so then we've got to make hard choices, whether it's looking at what we ask employees to contribute. Maybe we raise our deductible. You know, one of the things that we did just a couple weeks ago, we raised the county's deductible on our liability insurance. We took it from $5,000 to $10,000, which then dropped our premium of about $30,000 on what we pay for our liability insurance. So it's just you're doing all these things and you're weighing risks and benefits against things, trying to decide where is that sweet spot where we fund it enough to continue the services, but also then make sure that we're being fiscally responsible. But you don't want to cut it to the point where it's no longer effective. So, and especially when it comes to our county roads, you know, they're in very good shape because we've invested in them, and you don't want to, in a downturn, allow them to start to decay. Then you start to look at kind of like the potholes around the city of Buffalo, and then you're really faced with the hard decisions of how do you pay to either replace or repair. And so it's critical that we take care of those roads.
Well, and it seems like the budget would be one of the more difficult things to do as local government, being that you always have more needs than money.
Absolutely. And that you'd love to fund everything that's worthwhile, but unfortunately that's just not a reality. You know, one of the good things in Wyoming is that our state has to have a balanced budget, which I think is great. And we follow a similar situation as we can. What's nice, we do have some reserve accounts in the event that we ever got into an emergency, had a situation where we had an unanticipated expense. You kind of plan for those. But yeah, absolutely. You try to be as responsible with the tax dollars as you are with your own checkbook.
And moving on to some construction talk, TW Road, what's going on there?
That's right. So, Brady, we've got a project that's actually underway now. They've started. They're in the process of moving utility poles out of the way of the right-of-way. We've got some of the utility service providers doing some boring under the road to change some locations of some lines, whether it's gas lines. There's a lot of fiber optic out in that area, telephone, TV. And what is going on right now, Rocky Mountain Power is going to add redundant power to the city of Buffalo, which actually is going to hopefully help cut down on blackouts.
What does redundant power mean?
So basically, you have power that will come into Buffalo in two different places. So let's say on the town the maybe on the north end, you get a tree that knocks out part of the power. Well, then they can bring the power supply in on that other line, use the loop, and have less customers that are affected by a blackout. So it's a good thing. So what they're doing is basically bringing that power down across Stockyard Road, down Parmalee Street into the city of Buffalo, so they get a loop. Loops are always a good thing when it comes to whether it's water, power, gas, because it lessens the chance of service interruption. So that's what's going on right now. The bigger, better picture about this is they're going to really enhance TW Road in that section where we've seen a lot of growth in businesses. We're adding a turning lane there so that on Wednesday, when it's sale day at the livestock barn and trailers are backed up, people can have free flow of traffic because then they can use that turning lane. We're going to address some safety concerns on that turn as you're coming down the hill off the dump as you kind of go into the rules farm and their gravel pit there. It's kind of a blind intersection. You've got trucks coming out of there. We've been fortunate. We haven't had some collisions or near collisions. And then there'll be some graveling work and some other things basically on out past Mr. R's. So it's a good project. It's funded with about $1 million from the Industrial Road Program. We got $560,000 from the SLIB board, and then the rest we're using money that we get back in gas tax. And so we've saved that over the years because we knew this project was coming, and so we'll be able to pay that. The contractor is Simon Contractor, and now everybody's kind of going, oh, here we go. Is this going to be another Lobbin Street? Well, I think they're going to work very, very hard to restore the public trust in there, but people should also know that we're not going to stand for any delays, any problems.
How often do you have a construction project where there's no delays?
Well, over budget and on what? We want it on budget, on time, and maybe even under budget. But we've partnered with YDOT, and so Isaac Finkel, who's our resident engineer here, is going to be the overseer of this project, which I really believe is going to help eliminate some of the problems. Simon wants to maintain a good relationship with YDOT because that's where the really big projects are. But also, I think they would really like to demonstrate to the folks of Buffalo and of Johnson County that they can do a good project and they can do it on time. And they have a very aggressive schedule. This project is supposed to be almost done by November. So you will see a little bit of interruption if you're headed out that way as they have to shift some
or
traffic.
Or if winter keeps hitting.
That's been the kind of hard to get out there when it's under snow or a big mud hole. But you will see some shifts in traffic to help facilitate the dirt work that's going to widen that. And also you may see some flaggers and some other things. But it'll be just a good project. And very pleased to get that going and get it completed.
Absolutely. And coming up, we've got some public meetings. What are some of the upcoming public meetings people should know about?
It is. I'll start with next week. So next Tuesday at 3:00, and the state of Wyoming has decided that they are very interested in building a skilled nursing facility for veterans. We're one of the few states in the country that does not have one. We really believe that the logical place to put it is right here at the Soldiers and Sailors Home. The infrastructure is there. The state owns the land. You already have a director. You have a kitchen. You have staff. So it would really lower the overall cost of setup for that. So the state of Wyoming is in the process of doing a series of public informational listening sessions. So they're going to be in Buffalo on the 17th, which is Tuesday, 3:00, up at the Soldiers and Sailors Home, having a listening session about possibly putting that facility there, and the commissioners are organizing a task force to work on that, because you know, you add a facility like that to Buffalo, it adds jobs, which is great. Those are good jobs, whether it's nurses, CNAs, support staff, make good salaries, have stability there, and more importantly, you provide a critical service to veterans who are either already at the Soldiers and Sailors Home, you know, they've become accustomed and comfortable in our community. Maybe they'd like to live out their days here. And so as they age and require additional care to have that facility. And it really allows for continuity care for them. They don't have to get uprooted by their family or by medical need and get sent somewhere else. So I really think it's a good thing for veterans, which I think we owe them a debt of gratitude and a debt of service. And we should do everything we can to make their time in their golden years as enjoyable as possible. And what better spot to be than at the foot of the Bighorn Mountains, enjoying it. And then, you know, you get a lot of those folks that are very involved in our community, whether they use the BATS bus and come in and take advantage of the programs at the senior center that AJ Mock puts together, and he does just a phenomenal job. So it really, it's just a great opportunity to provide better services to veterans, as well as save the taxpayers some money when they build that by using infrastructure that's already there. So that's a key one. On Thursday, and I believe that meeting starts at 4 o'clock at the Forest Service, they're having a listening session about their decision to not fill our district ranger position. And this is why it's so critical that we stand up and we tell them that we want a local district ranger, because a district ranger is the decision maker for our forest. We don't want to have to travel anytime we have an issue on the Bighorn National Forest, whether you're a permit holder and you're involved in agriculture and you graze cattle or sheep up on the forest. If you have a cabin up there and it's on a forest permit, you'd like to be able to drive up to that office and deal with the district ranger if you have a question. God forbid we have a fire or some sort of infestation, whether it's pine beetles or something that's causing an issue where we need to get in and do a treatment on the forest. It's always better when you have local control. I understand the Forest Service is trying to cut their budget. Everybody should be trying to cut their budget. But let's cut people in the conference rooms in Washington, D.C. Let's not cut the local decision maker who's the frontline guy, so that when you have a question about enjoying your forest, which is right there, we have the majority of the recreation on the Bighorn National Forest, you should be able to walk up into that office and ask them a question. Because my fear is they take away our district ranger, and so then they start to downsize that staff. Next thing you know, there's no forest office there. And when you have a problem or you have a question, there's nobody there. What are you then forced to do? Call an 800 number, drive to another community, get online. And those aren't good answers. And you as a taxpayer deserve to be able to walk up there and ask the decision maker what's going on.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have that decision maker local, as you mentioned, and not have to travel or call an 800 number. Who knows where that's going?
Yeah, because press 1 for Christmas tree
press
permits.
Press 2 to wait for 30 more minutes.
Exactly. So that's just what best government is, closest to the people, local, where you see them in the communities. And, you know, we were so fortunate. Mark Booth, who was our ranger here, was phenomenal. You know, he was active in Rotary. You see he and his wife in the grocery store. They were part of our community, and we want that for whoever our next district rangers. You know, we've had a district ranger here since the late 1800s, when this was part of the Forest Reserve program. So I think it would be really unwise for the brass at the Forest Service and pencil pushers out of Sheridan or elsewhere to tell us that we can't have a district ranger.
So then is this this decision a done deal, or is the public meeting just saying this is what we're thinking about doing?
This is what they're thinking about, and they're going to tell us how they're going to have somebody that's going to drive in 2 days a week from Sheridan and somebody who's going to drive in 2 days a week from somewhere else. Doesn't sound like very good continuity of leadership. And so we've engaged our congressional delegation. We've reached out to the governor's office for help on this. So it's not a done deal. And we're going to get that position filled, and we're going to get our district ranger.
Okay. And so when is that that public meeting?
That'll be on next Thursday at 4 o'clock. It's 4 to 6 at the Forest Service office just up the hill.
Okay. Talking with the Johnson County Commissioner Bill Novotny here on Community Speaks. Mr. Novotny, thank you so much for
taking
the time.
Always a pleasure, Brady. Good to see you, man.
Absolutely. Community Speaks brought to you, as always, by the Prescription Shop on Fort Street. You've got Classic Country, 1450 AM, 103.5 FM, KBBS.